Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover. Starring Josh Johnson and Chris McGill. Featuring Christina Thorson. And of course, you, the Instagram live chat. Now, sit back and enjoy this week's edition of The Crossover. Powered by Card Ladder.
Oh. Yo, what's up?
Back to a familiar background.
Yep. We are back.
We are back.
A little chilly in Dallas today. It's about maybe 60 outside. Not sure how long that'll last for, but it's been weird weather. Oh, we narrowly missed a hailstorm driving home yesterday. And there was probably three or four dozen cars pulled off to the side of the road that had had their windshields and other windows. It just looked like a meteor shower had rained down on them. They were just just destroyed. It was insane. Okay.
RIP insurance companies.
Yeah, everybody was on the phone with their – everybody was taking pictures of the giant hail and on the phone.
Well.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to The Crossover. Today is Friday, March 15th, and we are on a new schedule.
Oh, I have one announcement.
Hold on. I didn't say announcements yet.
Oh, I was getting excited.
Thank you. We are on a new schedule. So for the next 6 months, roughly, until the times change again, we are going to be going live at midnight Eastern instead of 11 Eastern, which had been for the previous 6 months. Okay. So, announcements. Christina has an announcement.
I do. There is a happy birthday I wanted to wish to someone today.
Okay.
That's all.
Christina wishes a happy birthday. And how about you, Josh? Any announcements?
We are not going to know who the someone is.
No.
No announcements.
No announcements for Josh. And how about mail days? Any mail days?
Nope. One of mine is late.
Oh, no.
I think it's fine. I'm not going to make everyone post that it's missing.
Please share this.
No, I think it's like in customs because it's coming from international.
All right. Just got to bribe an official. That's all.
It's in LA. Maybe I'll just drive over there.
I didn't get any card mail days, but I did get a book mail day. Morgan Housel's new book. Some people
that looks good.
It does look good. Some people may remember that I was a pretty big fan of his previous book. So we'll see if this leads to any Instagram story content.
Let me know. I'm finishing up a book. I'll need a new one soon.
What book are you finishing?
It's like a marathon running inspirational type thing.
Yeah, okay. I'm finishing up a book as well, Dr. Seuss.
Hop on pop? Oh, hop on pop action? What's that one that's actually really difficult? You know what I'm talking about? It's like super tongue twister. My son loves it. I can't remember what it is. But there's like a big time tongue twister one that he has. It might be hop on. No. It's like, there's like pages where it's like, dude, come on, seriously, I have to read this crap? It's like the same letter 100 times in a row.
Yeah. You have fun with that, all right? Here's what we have. Okay, so not as many questions, but a high quality batch of questions this week.
Agreed. I read all the questions on the post, and I thought they were all good. One of them I even said, this is a good question.
Yeah, it was a really good batch of questions this week. An efficient offering from the community. So let's get some questions, but we'll start off with one of your favorite topics. This is from JC2 Collects. Let's discuss trades of the hobby darlings Kenny Pickett, Sam Howell, and Desmond Ridder.
I like that you're starting me off with one of my faves. Thank you. You like to get me warmed up. Dude, those three guys, those specifically, are like the top three that I pegged as the one that I noticed the most last offseason and thought to myself, seriously, these three are the one you guys have pegged? I just kept seeing them over and over, just like, oh, this is the new pickup, this D&D on this guy, over and over. Sam Howell, Kenny Pickett, and Desmond Ridder. And Desmond Ridder, of course, was pegged by one of the bigger influencers, and all three, without fail, are now on different teams. Complete flops. It's hilarious. I just, like, it's funny, but also, like, how many times are we just going to, like, let this happen and not have these guys take accountability? It's insane to me. Like, I would just be so embarrassed. If these were my picks year after year, I would leave the hobby. It's just so terrible.
To that point, how much pain do they feel from the picks, you know, if they're only buying their cards in June and telling us how great they are in July so that they can sell them in August right before the season even begins?
I mean, in a lot of their videos, it's like, you know, I'm out here grinding, selling, making money. So, you know, I don't even think that there's much of a layer of like, I'm doing this for you guys. I think it's mostly like, just watch how awesome I am, and it's all about me.
Yeah, that has to be the greatest trio of flops.
And they're not, they're just like really embarrassing. Like, they're all just going to be career backups at, you know, at best.
Yeah, usually there's like one, you know how now that we're in this crypto bull market, you have like all the shit coins and the meme coins and stuff, and you have like Geo Bowden coin, and just like, it just gets more and more ridiculous. Usually there's one or two QB prospects. Like the year before last, it was Kellen Mond. You have like, yeah, you have like one, you know, but three is special. Over three is when we're so out of control.
It's just like, I'm pretty pissed that Desmond Ridder has brought his stain to my Cardinals, but, you know, he'll,
That's right.
I'll get to see him ride the bench, I guess, and laugh.
I didn't even want to mention that to you when I saw that he went to the Cardinals. I was like, God, this is not, I don't want to be the bearer of that.
I'd rather him be on the Falcons starter one more year and just let people hold on to hope a little bit longer. And then it can flame out, then go to the Cardinals.
All right. Bro Incognito actually makes a great point here. Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Zach Wilson is even better. Yeah, well, it's a good point. Okay, so I'm trying to find something special here, but we've been striking out as a hobby for a long time now, I guess. I get, every year you need the prospect, right? You need the QB prospects. Sometimes they just all tank.
Well, the point of it, actually, I think, is that as the influencer, you need to find the players that you can buy very, very cheap and in bulk and get their best cards and then trick everybody into thinking they have a chance. So it's not actually that you're prospecting they're going to be good. It's that you're prospecting you'll be able to trick other people that they're going to be good. It's like a meta thing.
Yeah, and I don't know how cheap his cards are going to be able to be obtained this offseason, but if Bill's podcast on NFL free agency is any indicator, I think he was like trying to say that CJ Stroud is the third best quarterback in the league, but he's settled that on like top six maybe or something.
So, I heard that. I'm like, we're going to have to like start this like John Morant, Trae Young thing on CJ Stroud, and I don't want to because it's like he's a young, exciting player, but dude, seriously, he's the third best quarterback in the league. It's been 1 year. Calm down. Remember RG3? Like, let's think about this logically just a little bit here before we like make him the MVP and Super Bowl, you know, incumbent here.
Yeah, for sure, man. All right. Mike Pinkerton 50 asks, is Jordan Love the next great quarterback?
The next great quarterback. Man, I think we already have a bunch of great quarterbacks. Is he going to join the top tier, I think, is the question. Is he going to join like the, you know, like the Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, Burrow range? I don't know. He had a good year.
Yep, he had a good year. It was his first year as starter. granted at an advanced age compared to most. And he was a very respectable ninth in QBR. That's what I would look at, Mike. I would just say, give me a few catch-all stats like QBR to tell me where he ranked last year. He was ninth. Okay. The quarterbacks ahead of him were Mahomes, Cousins, Stafford, Herbert, Lamar, Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, and Purdy. So is he going to advance beyond them? And then the ones who are just below him, Tua, Goff, Jalen Hurts, Gardner Minshew, Geno Smith, CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
And then, you know, lurking are guys like Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, guys who've kind of had down years or injury plagued years. So that's a lot of good quarterbacks in there. And I think just Jordan Love even being in the mix of some of them is good for a guy going into a second season. But the next great quarterback, way, way too early to call that, my opinion. All right. Now the topic of the week, a topic that's taken twists and turns throughout the week. And it is on card care, we'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I don't really even like that phrase because it's already seeding ground by calling it card care rather than whatever it should be called.
How many do you have bundled here? How many questions?
I have on this topic 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 7, 6 serious and a 7th goofy question on this, but I don't have them bundled. I actually want to take them one by one this time.
Okay, because I wanted to save the Benny Celebrito one, like, separate. But if you're going to do that already, never mind.
Great minds. I felt like this time we needed to do that. So yep. And yeah, I have Vinny's set up as the 5th one. So okay. The first one is from Xanu23 Sports Cards, and he says, "When can we expect PSA to decertify the Wemby Prism Black PSA 10, since they know Kurtz was used on it?" And so I use this question to set it up because obviously, if the premise of this question is true, there's a lot of validity to it, but I have to defer to the statement of PSA's president. So he sent out a tweet and made a comment. So here he is holding the card. And as a side note, you can see that the centering isn't quite as obnoxious as the initial scans appeared to be, because the card, I think, was shifted in the slab a little bit. But this is what PSA's president had to say. "Lots of conversations about this card in recent days. I got to hold it and its cousin." So he also there has the black shimmer with it. "While they were both in house, PSA stands by the original assessment and our graders did not detect anything with the surface to deem it was altered. That said, I want to clarify, PSA does not approve of any chemicals or foreign substances being added to the surface of a card to improve the condition or appearance. If we detect that this has happened to any card, we will consider it altered."
Yes.
Like,
if yeah, we detect this.
Yes. I tried to read it a little bit slowly. Like, every word there matters when it comes to PSA's policy. Go ahead, Josh.
No, you said it. You can keep going. The if part is, I just wanted to, you enunciated it, so I'm double enunciating it.
Yeah, because the question here is like, when will they decertify it, since they know that Kurtz, whatever, was used on it? Well, the opinion is that the graders did not detect that anything occurred with the surface to deem that it was altered. And if there were chemicals or foreign substances added to the surface to improve the condition or appearance, they would have considered it altered.
Yep.
So that's the point there, and that's a good way to start framing this topic, is that PSA didn't find or detect substances being added to the card, and if they had, they would have deemed it altered from the press.
Yes. And so I just wanted to get this part out right now. PSA and the graders and the president and everyone involved cannot make their decisions based on public opinion, comments on the internet, posts, or whatever, like where the public is swaying on the opinion of where they think a specific thing is. They have to like actually go by their standards of how they grade the cards. They have to keep things consistent. They have to stay within their rules, et cetera, et cetera. The part that makes this one a little bit interesting is that it's basically like on video that the guy's like, yeah, I used Kurt's card care system. That's the part where it's like, okay, you know, maybe we should probably look into this further. Now, that doesn't mean that guy did not admit in the video that he used a specific foreign substance, as Ryan says in the post, but I don't know. That's probably the gray, fuzzy part, but like, PSA can't just like desert it because there's like a public outcry. If they looked at it and this is within their rules or whatever, that they have to stick to that. Otherwise, it's just complete chaos, and the grading company like guidelines are gone. You know,
exactly. So that's just some establishing facts here for
right.
Because there's going to be a conversation that follows here that moves from the particulars of the Wembanyama to the abstract topic of doing things to prepare cards for grading. And so these are two separate topics. One is the specifics of the Wemby. The other is a topic in general. All right. So the next here that I have is from Ryan Bitter. And he says, as collectors, and let me just like pause on that for a second, because there's been a lot of opining about card preparation, card care, and very little of it is coming from the point of view, or assumes the point of view, of somebody who just wants to buy a card, as opposed to somebody who is submitting a card for the purpose of selling it to maximize their short-term profit.
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah.
Yeah, go. Like, we are the only ones that have talked about it so far from the point of view of, like, stop altering my fucking cards.
Okay, so yeah, so this is why this is great from Ryan, and he's just thinking as a collector. He's as a collector, okay, taking the point of view of the collector. How would you feel if you learned with certainty that a graded card in your collection had been cleaned or quote unquote restored beyond wiping with a microfiber, such as being soaked in chemicals, being pressed, being buffed, being waxed, etc.? Would you prefer it in its pack pulled state, albeit with the minor imperfections?
Yeah, this is the hardest question of the night for me, because it's like, I have to actually think about, like, what if I found out this about one of my cards, and it's like, it sucks. I mean, I obviously rather just have it pack pulled and normal. You'd always choose that. Always would choose that. There was another question about turning a patch upside down. Like, I'd always just want it the way that it came out of the pack. I aesthetics are great, and like the PSA 10s are awesome. I love PSA 10s, but I just want like a fair, true PSA 10. You know, it's like I've got this order of like how I want things ranked for my collection. It's like I'd love them all. I love it to be a pack pulled perfect PSA 10 that I bought for cheap, and now it's worth a billion. You know, you want all this stuff. So yeah, it sucks. If I found out, I don't know. It's like, do I unfoil everything? Because if you try to get your, you know, you try to return it, and then you try to get PSA to do the guarantee, but they're going to stand by it. So they're not going to do they're going to keep it in the slab, you know? So you're kind of just stuck with it. I think you just got to live with it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's a really tough position to be in. And there is a likelihood that any collector at some point in their collecting days will discover, have reason to suspect, that a card that they own has had some sort of alteration done to it, or some issue with the provenance. You know, that happens. I love that you pointed out that there is an extra layer of comfort if that card is in the slab of a company that guarantees its work. And that to me lends a lot of confidence to purchasing cards in those slabs. For me personally, now there's this point about if it happens, it's unfortunate. And you know, there's different types of cards, right? Like there are some cards like the Wemby Black 1/1 where there ain't going to be another one.
Right.
So you have to take it as it is. There are other cards where there's thousands of copies, and in that case, you know, I would strongly prefer to have a card that is in its state that it was in when it came out of the pack. And, you know, to me, I even go so far as a collector, I prefer a card to have had the minimal amount of things done to it as possible.
Right.
Full stop. So even if I have one card in front of me that has had three thumbprints wiped off of it, I have another card that never had a microfiber cloth even touch it, I want the one that's never been touched.
Right.
Even if they're the same otherwise, same condition, same card, same grade. And but the gap between those two is small, but the gap starts to get larger the more things that are being done to the card to change how it was when the person found it in their hand. So let's go to the next question here, because this next question presses on a similar topic here, which is this. Northwood's card collector says, considering the topic of altering cards, let's imagine you go to a show and you find a patch of a player that you want to add to the PC. A patch auto of a player you want to add to the PC. But there's a problem. The patch is clearly upside down. You buy it, you take it home, and you take the patch out. You flip it the correct way and reinsert it in the card's patch window. Now it presents so much better and seemingly the way it should be. Would you consider that altering the card? Or are you just fixing a quality control issue? Parentheses, and I must add that taking an original patch out of a card and swapping it in for a new one is never okay.
Oh, man. This one is just, I would never do that. I'd rather just have it be upside down. I'll never do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to say it's altered or not. I guess you altered the card. You changed its original state. I don't know. I've never, like, looked at a patch and been like, dang, I wish it was the other way.
Well, see, this is, this to me is that's a great point. I agree with you. And this is a great question, because this question really challenges the idea that card preparation is just doing what the manufacturer wanted to do but couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So the card preparer can step in and change around the card because they know what the manufacturer wanted it to look like. And so they're just putting it back to how it should have been in the first place if the manufacturer had actually properly done their job. And so this hypothetical is questioning that, because it's like, okay, so if the reasoning by which card preparation can occur is that it's this third party person who's simply returning the card to the state it was always meant to be in by the manufacturer, well, then where does this end? Can you take a patch out and turn it around because you believe that the manufacturer meant it to be placed a certain way? Let's take it a step further. Can you wipe an autograph off of the card, bring it to the athlete, and have the athlete sign it again because the autograph had a smudge and the manufacturer surely intended the card to not have a smudge in the autograph?
Right.
And or take it a step further. What if you take a pen and you add a little bit of ink to the smudged autograph to fill it in? You're using an identical colored ink pen, and you're just making it look like how the manufacturer wanted it to look. So you're just adding a little bit of pen to fix the streak in the autograph from the athlete, because that's how the autograph is supposed to look. Or let's get even more extreme. What if the card's off center because it has a border that's too big on one side or on the other side? Can you take scissors to that card and remove a little bit of the edge? Because of course the manufacturer would have intended that the card had been perfectly centered. And that's this hypothetical that Northwood's card collector brings up causes the person thinking about the topic to have to think about all of these things. And in my opinion, this question underscores to me the rationale, if one wants to permit card preparation or card care or whatever, the rationale cannot be I'm returning the card to the state that the manufacturer intended it to be in. It cannot be that. Because A, you don't know what state the manufacturer intended it to be in. B, the manufacturer is not a thing that intends anything. Manufacturer is a bunch of equipment and designers and product teams that send orders to a printer to print sheets of things. The intent is to make the best possible card, but the way that the card comes out is the way it comes out. And once that card comes out of a pack, that is what the manufacturer produced. And there is no way to say, well, I'm just going to do things that are going to put this card back to how the manufacturer wanted it to be without exposing yourself to all sorts of things that we have long considered alterations.
Well said.
Okay.
Can I cook? Can I cook for a second?
Yes, cook.
I don't know if you have this question coming up, so I'm not going to miss the opportunity. And we touched on it briefly, but all the content, and it's unrelated to yours, so I'm putting a pause in what you said, digesting it, saying something else. All the content I saw this week was coming, and you said this, was coming from the investor flipper persona. And like, oh, this isn't that bad, you guys. Why do you guys care about this? Look over here. There's trimmers, there's breakers, et cetera, et cetera. This is not a problem. It's just water. It's just pressing. Who cares? You know, like, this doesn't matter. Why are you guys getting all butthurt about it? The reason you're saying that is because you know that if this becomes an issue, then the party's fucking over. Because all that it does to you is benefit you to flip and make money and continue the train, cleaning cards, the process you've set up to make money. Whereas coming from the collector's point of view, which we haven't heard from at all, not even a little bit, no content I've seen, even like the big accounts, it's all just like, you know, what is the PSA's reaction? What does anyone give a shit about the people like us that are like the end consumers of these cards that actually care about the provenance and the state that it was in and when it's in now? So like thinking about, you know, what you're doing to a card in order to profit for yourself versus like thinking about what you're doing to a card that someone wants in their collection and you're now altering it without telling them just because, you know, you're going to have it in a PSA 10 slab. So what do you care? You're just going to flip it to them. That's the part that kind of makes me mad. I get it. You know, I understand there's businesses built on flipping cards and grading. I understand it. You know, this is part of the game. We've talked about how that's good to bring money back into the hobby so you can sell your cards to build your collection. There's good ways of doing it. There's bad ways. But I just haven't heard the perspective of the collector and the end user of like, man, this kind of sucks for us. Like, nobody gives a shit about what we think about this. You know, like, this sucks. And so that. Well, you can react, but the other thing is like, I've mentioned this before, so I'll bring it up again. If you're concerned about what you think is the line or like where should I go with this? You know, you went through the different levels. Just imagine not only that someone else in the hobby is watching you over your shoulder what you're doing, but now that a grader from PSA is literally watching you with the sheet of the guidelines of all the N1s, N2s, N7s, whatever. And they're watching what you're doing with the card. Would you be concerned and would you change your behavior based on what that person is watching over your shoulder? If you would change your behavior, you're probably doing something wrong and you shouldn't do it. So that's usually a pretty good litmus test. I like your test as well of stepping through and like, you know, where do you find your line and stuff? So that's all I have to say on this. I don't really want to keep
going. Yeah, I love that litmus test thing. I first heard you give that years ago when trimming was the topic. And I kind of came up with like a slightly different version of it that I've said to a few people, which is, would you put this in your eBay item description? What you did to the card? Because if you're comfortable putting it, I don't think anybody would be uncomfortable saying this card was wiped with a microfiber cloth.
Right.
But I think that sellers would hesitate before they said, this card has had chemical solutions applied to it. And they would definitely hesitate before putting in the description, this card had a corner rebuilt. or this card had an edge taken off. But the and I think that's a great litmus test. But the thing that's a little bit scary about it is that in the case of this Wemby, the initial content surrounding it, including videos that had been filmed and then Instagram posts that were made, shouted out Kurt's Card Care, which is a company that offers a solution that gets placed on cards to ostensibly improve something about the surface of them. And so it fails my litmus test.
Right.
And
would you put in the description, I used Kurt's Card Care to get this PSA 10, so, you know,
they basically did that.
I know, but
except they didn't they just gave a shout out. They didn't say what they did.
Yeah.
And then, and later, the shout out to Kurt's Card Care was removed from the Instagram caption. All right. So I think that there was some regret about doing that. But I just wonder, I don't know that they thought that they were doing anything edgy. I think they thought that, hey, this something about Kurt or the product or a Kurt branded microfiber cloth, we don't really know, but something about it, we wanted to give a shout out to it. And there was, I don't think that they thought they were violating any norms.
Right.
And so that's where I come back to sort of a thread that we've been tugging at here, which is that there surely is not enough representation in opinion making in the hobby over the last few years that's coming from people who will explain to dealers and the like that we as collectors, we strongly prefer to have that Wemby as a PSA 8 than to have it as a PSA 10 with solutions applied to it, if that did in fact happen. So
yeah,
I think that there's an informational asymmetry here, and I'm quite sure that the submitters of the card would have loved to be able to have done that over, not knowing what they know now, and not have meant that.
There's a question in the chat: is putting a card in a dehumidifier altering it? I just ask it back, like, would you be okay dehumidifying a card in front of a PSA grader before you submit it to them? I would not. I personally would not. I would not do that. And I would not want it to be, hey, this card that you bought, that's a 2004 card that you bought from this guy that went to this guy, and it's a PSA 10 now, and you got it on eBay, so you don't know the history of it. You just have it now. This was actually put under a dehumidifier. I'd be like, seriously? What the fuck does that even mean? You put it, what is that? What the fuck? You put it in like your fucking sauna? You took it in with you and flattened it out? It's just like, nah, I don't know.
So I jotted this down when you were talking. The collector is thinking in scenarios like this, what do I want in my collection? I'm collecting cards as the end user of them. I want them from the pride of ownership of them and so forth. And what is my preference? How do I want my cards to be? And in my opinion, on business, it's wise for the dealer or the flipper or the run-of-the-mill submitter who's just trying to grade and sell a few cards. It's wisest to think about, what does the end user want? That's your customer, ultimately. That's the customer. And it might not be the card might get flipped around a couple of times, maybe tons of times before it makes it to an end user. But the end user is the one upon which the entire market is predicated. If there isn't the possibility of an end user for a card, that is a game of hot potato that can quickly disintegrate. There's nothing to stand on there. So I think about that. I think it's really when somebody is sitting down and they're deciding, what do I want to do to prepare a card before grading? I would think about that. I would think, if my buyers or my potential buyers knew what I was doing, would they still want these cards? That's a good question to ask oneself in that situation. All right. So you referred to this question. I'll just read it real quick and see if there's any other reactions before we get to Vinny's question. It's from TJ is online, who says, with everything going on in the hobby, mainly scammers, loaded breaker boxes, card trimmers, influencer pumping, shill bidding, and patch swapping, people are far more worried about wiping down and showering sports cards with distilled water.
This question is so incorrect. I can't, my brain hurts. This is, we've talked about all those other topics ad nauseum on the show for years. This is the third time we've talked about this new topic. So it's definitely not, like we're saying it's, we're more worried about this than the other ones. We're worried about all these. It's just, this is the topic of the week. And again, this is a misdirection move from people that want us to say, look over here at the real bad guys. Don't worry about what I'm doing over here, making money, flipping cards. That's exactly what's happening. So no, nice try.
Yeah. And I would, I don't know if everybody else would, but I would extend the courtesy to people such as the submitters of the Wemby that look, like if you really got into the hobby again, like in 2020 or something or later or even more recently, or you just were never really following it closely, and then you went to a card show and like you saw that there were multiple people set up who were just preparing cards the whole time, and you don't really know the difference between them, and some are using just a microfiber technique and others are doing way more, and you just sort of thought that this was an accepted practice, like that's partially the responsibility of all individuals to educate themselves, but it's also a responsibility of the hobby community to enforce its norms and to amplify the voice of collectors. Collectors don't have platforms. Collectors are dentists and school teachers and people with lives typically who just like to come on social media for a few hours a week, share their pickup, have some group chats with friends, talk about sports, scroll eBay a few times a day, and build collections over a long period of time. They don't have YouTube shows. They don't have podcasts. They don't have time. They don't have time. And even if they did, would they want to do that? Most collectors are more private and focused on building their collection. So I do kind of cut a break to people who you know, are experiencing this for the first time or are fighting back against it because they didn't know that this was a thing. They had been led to believe it's something else. Like, it's difficult when you have a core belief and then suddenly it gets rocked and shook up and moved out of place. Like, it's difficult to deal with that. It takes time. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, my energy and passion towards this is less directed at like the bad guys and the people that I feel are trying to profit from this, and more from the perspective of like, no one's listening to our voice from the collector's perspective. And I have to be this outwardly passionate and upset and energetic about it. Otherwise I'm just going to get ignored. It's like, oh, who gives a shit about this quiet collector? No, it's not going to be quiet. And the other thing I'll say is PSA is going to have to like update some stuff and like keep up to date with this, because I mean, they always do. This is like part of the gig of being a grading company, is you have to be keeping up with the newest things that people are trying to sneak past you. They have to keep up with the list of new fakes that come out. They have to hire people with, you know, expertise on specific sets as they come out. And this is just yet another thing they have to add to their list of things to look out for. And, you know, whether this is coming from a specific submitter, you know, knowing that this person cleans cards, like they, which I know they do. I know they ban people who do this stuff. And I think it also comes upon some of these card shows that are willing to dole out space to people that are doing practices that PSA doesn't allow. Like, you shouldn't be handing out booth space to someone who's like waxing up cards, knowing that PSA, another one of your sponsors, doesn't allow that, knowing that they're going to go to PSA. It's just like, you're creating this funnel. You're allowing this. I don't know. There's just so much that has to be unpacked, and it probably won't be, because that's the hobby we're in, and we're just going to keep going, you know?
Right.
On Josh's point about PSA having to... On Josh's point about PSA having to, like, create new norms and, like, ways to test this, chem wipes. Like, literally are wipes that you can put on a surface, and then you can like see what chemicals matching to a color code the wipe turns, which will tell you if a chemical's on the surface. So like maybe we should all invest in chem wipe stock because PSA should be buying.
We're always looking for ways to profit. Corporate mistakes.
That's the pivot out of this whole scandal was a conspiracy ginned up to increase the stock value of what do you call it? Chem wipes?
They're called chem wipes.
Well, like the other thing that we're fired up about is like, oh, who cares? You know, you're just like, the card looks better. Why do you care? Why are you bitching about it? It looks better. Everyone agrees. There's also could be some long-term effects to some of these chemicals we don't know about, where 10 years from now, all these fucking cards turn green and it's like, see, you ruined our cards. And you know, like we just don't know. We don't know what we don't know. So like, I'd rather just not have it on the card.
Yeah. Christina gave me a metaphor the other day when she and I were talking about this, and the metaphor was pesticides. And it was the idea that this was a chemical that was initially sprayed on things that was thought to be harmless. And it took a long time before the long-term negative effects were fully understood.
Right.
And then you evaluate, in the case of the cards here, the upside is that the card becomes shinier or some imperfection with the surface or something is improved. But the risk is that there is some sort of potentially long-lasting issue with mixing chemical substances with ink and paper stock.
Yeah.
And that's not an unreasonable, I don't know nearly enough about chemistry to be able to tell you what percentage risk we have here. I have no idea, but it's not zero.
It's higher. Right. Yeah.
Well, the fucked up thing about your, which is a great, like fantastic analogy, the pesticide, is that marketing teams and, you know, corporate companies that wanted to profit off of that just coined the term organic to like profit off. Hey, ours doesn't have pesticides, so it's better. And that's what's going to start happening. People in our descriptions will be like, this got a PSA 10, and I didn't use any solution. This thing is actually a PSA 10.
Yeah. Well, like, I keep coming back to this, but like, I am verging very rapidly, not because of this particular card, but because of the response that I've seen, that there's a number of dealers and people in the hobby who have sort of come out in support of the idea of preparing cards using chemicals. It's really got me verging on the point of like, before I buy a card from somebody, I'm going to ask.
Well, so I have a card that I have in a PSA 10 and it's a pop 2. And one of the reasons I have it is because it is a pop 2 and it's really, really hard to get in a PSA 10. There's 50 of them, but it's really hard to get a PSA 10. And then a third one showed up in the pop report and I saw it in the pop and said, oh my God, there's a third one. You got to be shitting me. Saw it show up. And then you sent me a freaking video where the guy's like, thanks, Kurt's Card Care. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. This fucking card, that's the third one, has reduced the value of mine, and it's because they cheated. So there's that angle as well.
Yeah. So that, I think, leads in nicely to Vinny's topic. So let me get to Vinny's. Vinny says, always enjoy the show.
It's funnier now.
Setting aside the ethics of, quote, card care, what impact do you think will have on pricing if it becomes more generally accepted and or undetectable? The supply of highly graded cards will go up if it's undetectable, and therefore that may decrease demand for them. On the other hand, demand for low-end cards will go up as they become the supply for the cared-for cards, and they will become scarce. Without hobby standards for card care, like in other markets, cards are in a precarious position right now. Thanks, Vinny.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a really good question but we've sort of cheated and like answered it a bunch of times throughout. But it's like a nice way to finish us out here. And it's a really well thought out question. I would say though, in terms of, I just don't think it's going to move the needle very much because we've already had so much of this in terms of like trimming, patch swapping, pop protection, you know, like, oh, was this graded? 10 years ago versus a year ago, like people would rather have the new slabs because they're tougher. Like there's always this sort of feeling of, oh, is this like a PSA 10 10 or is this like a PSA 10 kind of, you know what I mean? We've always sort of had that hovering over us. And this is just like yet another thing. The thing I will say though is that of any points that, you know, is like, this does seem a little bit more easily accessible than the other things. Like the barrier to entry to do this is easier. You could just send it to one of these companies. You could buy these little kits now. It's very, very easy to just like get started on this yourself, which makes this probably one of the more daunting things to get past. Do you agree?
I do agree.
Yeah, okay.
I completely agree. And that's happening in concert with the semi-normalization of it.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a double whammy there. But this question from Vinny made me think about things from like more of an economist's point of view. He's talking about supply and demand. And an economist would observe this, among other things. There is a transfer of wealth happening throughout this whole process. And it's wealth being transferred from collectors, from the value of their collections, into the people who are generating new high-grade cards that otherwise would never have existed. And the way that that wealth is being transferred is it goes like this. So if I have a card that's a population 3, and I purchase it at a price that reflects that there's 3 of them and none higher, and then suddenly a method of randomly generating 10 more copies in that grade emerges, and the card goes from being a pop 3 to a pop 13. My pop 3 has greatly diminished in value, holding everything else constant. My pop 3 has diminished greatly. Assuming that demand stays the same for that card. There once was 3, now there's 13. So the value of my pop 3 now has to be calculated as the value of a pop 13. The supply of it is more than quadrupled. So my collection has significantly lost value on that card. And the value that I lost has been transferred to the people who are taking a card that was less valuable in a raw or a lower grade condition and bringing it up into the condition that my card was in. And so now they've added a new one to the supply. They've made a marginal gain because they've improved the condition of their card. They're able to sell it for more money, but it's brought down the value of all the pre-existing cards in that condition. It's a transfer of wealth. It's an invisible transfer of wealth. It's not an intentional transfer of wealth, but it's a transfer of wealth. And if it happens enough times, you know, it can in the aggregate add up to serious damage to the value of collections. So Vinny's comment made me think about that. Now here's the flip side of it. All right. Because I workshopped that theory with some people, and one of them pointed out, they said, well, how do you know that any of these card preparations are even doing anything at all? How do you know that if people had just cracked these out, that, you know what, if you crack out a BGS9 and it turns into an SGC95, totally random hypothetical, how do you know that it wouldn't have done that anyway?
Yeah.
How do you know that that's just not part of the variance of the grading process, and maybe the BGS9 was undergraded all along?
You're selling pixie dust.
Maybe. What if it's a placebo?
Yeah.
What if it's a placebo? So and then the point was further made, and if it wasn't a placebo, if it truly had a high success rate, why would that service be packaged and sold to consumers at a pretty cheap entry price? Why wouldn't the purveyors of that skill set go around card shows, buy up all of the low grade cards, and simply wave their magic wand and turn all of those low-grade cards into high-grade cards and keep the recipe for themselves?
Right. That's a good point. This is like the person selling gambling tips, knowing they can't actually make money gambling themselves.
Right. Exactly. So that's the flip side of this, is that what if the fears that I'm having, that hypothetical that I had of a pop 3 to a pop 13, what if that's a completely nonsensical hypothetical? Because what if that is never going to happen because there is no form of preparation that can take a pop 3 to a pop 13? What if it's just, what if the impact is null, or it's a wash? Sometimes it helps a card, sometimes it hurts a card. Or what if it's such a small percentage of cases where it's actually improving it that it's really, it's marginal. It's not really relevant. It's not anything worth thinking about. It's a valid counterpoint.
Well, my counter to the counter to the counter is PSA says you can't do it. And if I'm grading cards with PSA and they say I can't do it, then I'm not doing it.
And that's what it comes back to, right? Yeah. It's like the stated policy of that grading company, and I think others as well, and the general consensus among third-party authenticators is don't deceive us when you're submitting cards to us. Don't do these things to these cards. Give us the cards as you got, as you found them. And
I've got a litmus test. If you want to use a card cleaning service or an individual, you should ask them if they're banned from PSA before you send it to them or use their kits.
Yep. All right. 23 over ELO comes in with, is the Butter Brigade killing grading? And like we've addressed lots of things that can be applied to this. The observation I have to this is just that it's connecting ideas that do connect, which is the importance of grading is creating a set of is a way of stratifying an existing pool of cards based on condition. It's a way of being able to use something that collectors value, which is I want the best looking version of a card in the highest condition. And then grading comes along and gives it an objective point of view. They encapsulate it, they authenticate it, and then it creates population reports, right? And then you have X amount of this grade and then X plus Y of the next grade or whatever, potentially. So there is a connection here because grading and the market that relies on grading does care about population reports. So that's the connection there, right? Do you have anything to say to 23 over ELO here?
No.
The Butter Brigade killing grading?
No, I think this horse is dead.
And finally, from Yitzcock, do you use saliva on your cards before grading?
No. Just wipe it down with microfiber. I'm just picturing myself like the PSA guy again, or girl, is over my shoulder, and I'm like, you know, it's like, nah, they probably wouldn't want to watch me spit on this thing.
All right. Although there are some collecting categories where saliva would add the value, as well as other bodily fluids.
Oh man, never mind. I've gotten in enough trouble tonight.
All right. Next, moving on, new topics. From Tiger Jordan 311. Oh, this is right up your alley, Josh, and you are the master of this question.
I doubt it, but
wait, you are. You'll laugh when you hear this. Which way should horizontal cards be slapped?
Yes, I am.
Left or right side on top, but there's more to it than that.
Well, what's more to it?
You have three. There's three.
Oh, you want me to explain it?
Yes.
Yes. There's three levels. One, is there something on the card? So the card's horizontal, right? That's a given. Is there something on the card that does not present horizontal and does present vertical? For example, an autograph. Is there an autograph that is adjacent to the card and goes a different direction to where if you slab that autograph upside down, the card would look silly? Second, Is the back of the card vertical? If it is, put that right side up. Third, make the top of the card on the left, meaning the flip would be on the right side of the card.
Thank you. The three levels. It's the decision tree of slabbing horizontal cards.
Anytime they PSA has followed that decision tree 99% of the time, and there was one time they didn't, and I my brain is just like, you know, short circuit.
But you got it corrected, right?
I did.
I think you did. Yeah.
Yeah. I put in the notes, please fix this. And they're like, it's like, we're not re-slab, we're not re-grid. No, just turn it.
Right. All right. Next question from Preston's Cards. What do you do when your PC player retires?
Man, I thought this was from AD99 Collector. It was from Preston.
This is from Preston. Applicable to him as well.
What would you do if McCaffrey retired?
Yeah, that's something that I thought about. It doesn't really change anything as far as my collecting goes, but gives me a lot less to root for on Sundays.
Yeah, I saw that AD99 Collector went live, and he was like, you know, your initial reaction is like, you know, amazing career, and you want to like celebrate it. Then there's like the fallout of like, what do I do now? it's like, you know, his handle is named after this guy. Like, you know, it's going to be, it's a tough transition. It's a tough spot. I would say just like, maybe, you know, keep going with it. Cause I think, you know, there might be in a couple more products. You might have the MJ, you know, the year after lingering effect of products, and then maybe find a new player. And if that's your thing, like if you like collecting active guys, and find a new player and keep going.
Yeah. Lakers Exquisite says mine are all retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I spent the first three-ish years coming back to the hobby collecting only retired players. I dipped my toe into Hakeem. Had a few Kobe cards, had a few other retired guys, but it was almost all and heavily focused on Michael Jordan, who had been retired for over a decade and a half. And it's great. Collecting a retired player is fantastic. In fact, it gives a whole different level of focus to your collecting because it removes the player variable. The player and their achievements and their legacy is locked in. So
yes.
Now you're just focused on creating the best possible collection that you can.
Well, I was going to do a slight zag, and Aaron Donald gives me the perfect example of this zag. I don't think from the perspective of a collector, you almost want the player to retire earlier than you think they should, because generally in a player's career, they kind of do this little right. shape, and then they eventually like tail off. If you retire here, your average stats stay really high. So for Aaron Donald, I believe he played 10 seasons. I want to say it's 10. And he has 8 first-team All-Pros. So he has this like 80% hit rate of first-team All-Pros, which is absolutely insane, right? I think the only other 8-time first-team All-Pro defensive players were like Bruce Smith, Reggie White, and Lawrence Taylor. And I think he's played less seasons than all those guys. So he has like a better hit rate, better like average stats, because he didn't really have like the tail off. He like retired at the top. So there's a zag.
Love that zag. I'll add on to that. Not only do you not want to watch your player sort of without grace age into an unpleasant twilight of their career, because then like when you try to consume content surrounding that player, it's just like the local beat writers bitching about how they suck and stuff. Like, you don't like much respect to Russell Westbrook, but like that yeah. guy's been taking a beating by the teams that he goes to for the most part for years now. He is a league MVP. He averaged a triple-double, I think, for 4 seasons, or over the course of 4 seasons. A great career. But now if you're a Russell Westbrook collector, you kind of have to endure years of abuse of your player's legacy. Or not of their legacy, but like of their current standing until they retire. So like you get to excise that, which is nice. And then the thing that goes further is, don't ever let them become a head coach.
That's a great thing.
Don't ever just if you never go to head coaching. That is a lose all the way proposition. Even yeah. if you have a great year, nobody gets beat up more. Look, I hate Jason Jason Kidd the player because of how much I hate him as a coach.
Someone today was like, we should fire Vogel because someone's not playing good in the fourth. And I'm like, well, is he not like saying the magical words in the fourth for that one guy when it starts? I was just like, I'm not understanding. But yeah, we just like blame the coach.
Yeah.
Okay, but we could actually blame Jason Kidd because he doesn't coach. Like, there's a difference. I will be blaming Jason Kidd.
Yeah. Okay. And then you don't want them to go into the Tom Brady mode either, where they're just everywhere and, you know, they're at the white party and then they're going to be announcing all these games and then they're becoming spokespeople for cryptocurrency exchanges and like when Steph Curry intimated, or I don't know if he intimated it, but like there were headlines last week that he like wants to run for president maybe or something.
Aaron Rodgers.
It's like,
really jealous.
There is no faster way to make half the population hate you than to jump into the political arena.
And Aaron Rodgers has already been dabbling in that arena. So like everyone already hates him. And now it's like, oh great, now you've given us a straight line. Thanks.
Actually, Rodgers may be an interesting play because if everybody already hates him and then he like takes one side, then maybe only half will hate him.
Well, he is going into the middle party, whatever RFK is calling this party.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right. Maybe he's like, you know what? I'm not going to pick a side. I'm just going to go right down the middle.
Well, if he's lining up for that, then he's lining up to have everybody hate him. Or 80% in that. Because everybody's going to hate the independent who's going to split the vote for somebody.
True, 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 true.
Alright.
Like the Ross Perot.
Yeah. The Ross Perot Museum. Okay. From Kevin M. Cormier. Today's episode of Iowa Dave Sports Cards talked about JOMO, the joy of missing out. Is there a card or a player that you went after and you kept losing auctions and now you are glad that you did? I was losing a lot of Wander Franco auctions, and now I'm pretty happy I did.
I never like actively went down this path, but I did like kind of think about Trevor Lawrence for like a day. I'm glad I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's a good JOMO. I'm sure I have some. I just can't think of them right now. Oh yeah, that was the other thing about like the Aaron Donald, your player retiring, like. It is a chance to like pick the next guy if you really want to be collecting an active player, you know. And it's really nice to have the balance of a retired player and an active player in your collection.
Give yourself the excuse to start a new PC.
Yeah, exactly. All right. From JP Zidane 1, do you guys keep a certain budget buying cards? Have you ever overextended yourself before?
This is a good question. Usually like a spillover thing, like for my monthly spending, like some months I might have more than others. So it's not like a set budget. It's more of like the leftovers of everything else. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. Definitely, definitely does. I usually have like two different budget approaches. I want to be more in the budget approach of like save, save, save and wait for like one or two big cards per year or so or something like that. But then the other budget approach is like pick up little stuff along the way. If it's raw, grade it and just kind of enjoy it, hold on to it. And then when the big card comes out, then you can consolidate it into something. And like I did that approach for a few years and now I'm on the other approach.
Yeah, me too. Wait, so you get it raw and then what do? You just you just send it in, I guess, like a monster.
Yeah. Yep. I don't control the manufacturer and say, did you intend for this print line to be here?
Zing.
Because if so, I can remove it for you.
You didn't put it into a dehumidified room with a freaking compressor? You didn't do that?
No.
I can't even like picture any of us like in a room like like all this machinery and all this shit everywhere and there's like my wife opens the door and all the steam comes out. She's like, what the hell?
Yeah. If you really care about the way that the manufacturer intended the car to be, go work for the manufacturer. Go work in QC at one of the card companies. All right. From Splendid Sports, have you seen a Gem Master 1-1 in person before? How do you feel about the design as compared to the PMG in that set?
I've seen the Barclay in hand in person. They're sick. I think they're awesome. They're like super, they stand out a lot. I would say they definitely stand out as like, wow, this is definitely different than the gold or the regular PMG. Sorry.
I don't know that I've ever seen one in person, but to me, they're like the ultimate version of 98 rubies. It has a similar finish.
Yep,
a lot of people like the way 98 rubies looks, and this is like the platinum version of it or something.
Yeah, it's like the silver. It's like that, but it's more silvery platinum, yeah.
And I think it definitely – I think this question, maybe the author is getting at, like, maybe the PMG look might look nicer. It's less busy. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, more of a solid – and I could see people feeling that way. But I strongly prefer the Gem Master design, the Gem Master variation on the PMG look.
It kind of reminds me of like how the Black Finite stands out. Like it's got the black color, but it also has like the swirl effect. And then how the Super Fractor Gold Vinyl, like, yeah, it's got the gold, but it also has like this extra thing. It just kind of gives it that like one of one look to it, in my opinion.
Same. All right, from Jake's PC. Last week, Chris mentioned that modern cards are largely separated from each other by rarity, brand, and design. Rarity, brand, and design. Rank these 1 through 3 in terms of priority for you personally when you're looking to add a card to your collection. And is it the same ranking for 90s cards? So Drake said modern. I think he's talking about ultra modern. I think he's talking about ultra modern. And then he's saying, and then compare it to 90s, which I would consider to be modern. So anyway, what do you say, Josh? Rarity, brand, and design. How do you rank those 1 through 3?
I'll go design, then rarity, then brand.
Nice. I once upon a time probably would have went in that order, but I think now I go 1 rarity, 2 brand, and 3 design.
Mm-hmm.
For ultra modern. And I think rarity and brand are very close. That's like a 1A and a 1B. In other words, what I'm getting at is like significance. With the amount of insert sets and different parallels and different products that Ultramodern offers, it's so important to me to be able to figure out what are the most significant cards and then get the rarest version of that one.
Yeah.
And then it's a really great perk if it looks good. For 90s, I think I'm inclined to go rarity, then design, then brand.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because brand sort of fades away over time a bit with the 90s.
I think so.
Yeah. They kind of blend together just a bit.
Exactly. And you know what? That makes me think about a question that came in that asked about Gene. If I can find it. I hope I didn't. Oh, here it is. All right. From Jeffro's, Jordans, and More. Always think the show is meh. I'm fascinated whenever Gene McLeod is interviewed or
posted. That's interesting in the question. Come on.
Or post on Instagram. Who are some other creators, hobby heroes, especially from the 80s or 90s that we should know about? Like who designed the iconic Topps cards of the 90s? These are ones who, to me, we should have cards dedicated to them, and they should be in the Hobby Hall of Fame.
Yeah, totally agree. We're pretty lucky to have Gene and also Carbon like around from my two favorite eras of cards, you know, like the early Exquisite and then the 90s stuff. We're really lucky to have both of them active in the hobby and able to answer questions and take interviews, etc. So I'm not going to get any more greedy and like ask for anyone else to come out. Maybe some of those people want to remain private or they've moved on and stuff. So just having those two, I think, is great.
Totally agree. I think some of them are still working in the industry too.
Yeah.
And they may, and I think tastefully, they prefer to work in their roles and not to be the subject of the hobby spotlight. And then, which is a good role, which is a good approach, I think, for like people who are still active, executives and such. Probably a good way to do things.
Here's a litmus test. Anyone that we want to have a card made of them, they don't want that.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
I don't need to explain the other side, do I?
Nope. That is great. The one other name that I'll throw in to the list here is Dr. Beckett.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Beckett. The role that he played in his publication is almost undoubtedly the reason why I'm even in cards today.
Yep.
Was because those magazines were such a cultural staple for collecting and keeping interest for kids and for millions of people during their run.
All right. Without those three, I can undoubtedly say I would not be in this hobby.
Yeah, all those three together, 100%. But like the story of Jean and how she revolutionized design in the 90s by...
And rarity, serial numbers. And
well, it's almost unthinkable. It's almost unthinkable what the hobby would be like without her.
When she was talking about like how they were bringing design elements from like the Vegas part, my mind was just exploding. Because before that, it was treated as like this checklist set. You know, you just print the card of the guy or gal, put the stats in the back, and that's kind of the way it was. And then her and her husband came in and was like, what if we bring some design flair to this? And then it just like, you know, all bets are off at that point.
Absolutely. All right. Long question here from Lingua, but a thoughtful one. Lingua Sports Card says, there are certain segments of cards, such as relic cards and others, which I do not find interesting or aesthetically pleasing, and as such, I do not want them in my collection. When someone has a discussion with me about why I feel this way, I can make rational and valid arguments, and also I can say why I prefer the cards that I do prefer, which tends to be 90s shiny cards and similar. However, I am always worried that the person I'm communicating with will feel that I'm telling them that they should not collect relic cards or the other cards that I don't like. And nothing could be further from the truth. I would never tell someone else what to collect or that they should collect like me. So my question is this. Is it fair to criticize segments of the hobby that we don't like? Or should we just spend our time talking up and supporting the ones that we do? Disagreements about which cards to collect can lead to growth and understanding, but especially online, misunderstandings happen so easily that I worry that too much criticism over certain segments of the hobby can stunt growth. Thanks.
I like how much thought he's put into this question. Very well thought out. I'm glad that this is on the top of his mind. Like when he's speaking about cards publicly, you know, I kind of wish we'd all have some sort of thought around this when we're speaking, because, you know, anything we say could upset somebody or whatever. So I like that. Just kind of having that in the top of your mind. I mean, we struggled with this in the show. Like people think that we are pushing a specific thing versus another. And, you know, we have to say like, oh, this is what we, you know, this is our opinion on this, et cetera. The distinction though is like, you know, we're being asked and these questions are coming to us. So we're giving our opinion. And secondly, we're pretty defensive with like remaining inside the card space. It's like, we'll just, you know, we'll usually like give favor to, well, if it's a card, you know, we're in the area.
Yeah, exactly. I think there has to be room for criticism.
Agreed.
I think the answer can't be we all can only talk positively about what we like and we cannot offer criticism about what we don't. And I think it's going to play out just fine. And the criticism that's offered is going to be just fine, as long as it does come from a place that is coming from with Lingua, which is that it's coming from a place of personal opinion that's carefully considered and is considerate of how it might affect other people. And as long as that's the case, and as long as like the opinion is being dispensed out of a passion for something and out of a genuine take on something, and it's not being motivated by, I want to make people not like this so that it loses its value and I can go buy it, or I want to make people not like this because then they'll abandon it and come buy the stuff that I like. As long as like that's not the motivation, and that instead the motivation is just like, hey, I have an opinion, I want to share it. Maybe somebody will push back and teach me something, maybe not, but I'd like to share an opinion or a criticism. It would be so boring if we didn't have that.
Yeah, I think MK does a really nice job of this. Like, he very clear about what he likes, what he doesn't like. He shares his opinions, but he's respectful about it.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
maybe not in the group chats, but on his stories.
He did have a great streak of criticizing football cards.
Some people really fired up about that one.
Yeah, and he fired people up. You know, that's why, like, that's a great form of offering criticism, even trolling to some extent, but doing it in a way that is not coming from a bad place.
Well, you know, it's funny because you said someone's intent might be like, oh, I'm going to criticize this thing to turn this group off of it so that they sell it and come join my thing. Well, if you know anything about hobbyists, it's that we're cynical, pessimistic psychos. And if you do that, we're just going to collect that thing doubly hard. You actually backfired yourself.
Well, that's the tactical part of this all, is that if you do say that you like something or promote something, you're going to build 10 people who hate it right off the bat just because you like it.
So, guys, I'm here to say I hate exquisite basketball and gold refractors. They're terrible. Don't collect those.
All right. From Junk Wax Packs. As of late, why does it seem like product hits are pulled so soon after the product release date? For example, the Wemby Prism Black 1-of-1, the LeBron and Bronny dual autograph. Does the manufacturing company have any control over the timing? And if so, isn't it in their best interest to hold back the product hit from circulation until a certain amount of the product has been purchased and ripped and they've recouped funds? Box values and interest in the product subside after the big card is pulled, so why let it happen so soon?
But the Luka hasn't been pulled. I mean, we can find examples where it's pulled at different time ranges, right? It's just this is fresh in our minds that it's new.
Yep. But it hasn't been happening, though. Like, it does happen a lot, especially in the last 5 years, 4 years.
Yeah, I would just probably say that if there's any factor here, it's probably just like that breakers are getting like a lot of the supply very early and they're going through it quickly, more so than in the past. I don't know. I just don't know enough about all this to give us more answers.
That's completely my sense of it. My sense of it is that there is so much product, so much of such a large percentage of the print runs of like the hobby issues of the products are being opened immediately by breakers mostly, but also by hobby shops. And like the Wemby, the story behind the Wemby, I think, was that it was pulled from a guy who bought one hobby box from his LCS. So, and he was, it's like the story goes like I hope I'm not mixing up stories here, but I think the story was he called in, he was like, set aside a box for me. This shop was like, what box do you want set aside? He was like, set aside box number 7.
Oh, man.
And then that box had the Wemby in it. Now, like, the flip side of this coin, though, is that I don't know how many of the Wemby Golds have been pulled. I think, like, 2 maybe I've seen show up. Mm-hmm. So, like, that kind of implies that 70, 80% of the run might still be unopened. Who knows? I think that's, like, a decent litmus test for gauging what percentage of a product has been pulled is like look to a, something with a little bit of a higher per run than a 1 of 1, like how many of the out of 10s of something have surfaced, like a Wemby. But to the point of the question asking, isn't it better for the manufacturer if the hit doesn't come out? Yes. I think they would prefer if they fairly distributed all the boxes and it just so happens that the best card was in the very last box to be opened.
Yeah.
They would love that.
But that's nice knowing that it does seem pretty random, just as an outsider here, not a breaker. It does seem pretty random. And not always in the best interest of the people distributing the cards, which is good for us. And I was thinking, like, I'm not a breaker, but if I was, and I knew that there was going to be some new product kind of rolling out, you know, every other week or every month, I would just, like, rip open all of this. Like, why would I hold some of it back knowing I've got more coming, you know? So I would just, I've basically, like, a 2-week window here where it's all the focus is on Prism until the next product or however long that time is. I'd just be ripping it.
Absolutely. All right, from Deep Value Investor, let's discuss how Bitcoin and stocks, which have been flying lately, could actually be hurting sports cards due to many were looking at cards as an alternative in 2020 to 2022, and they have little interest in cards, so they could be throwing in the towel now and moving money back to stocks and Bitcoin.
To that person, I would say, have fun with stocks and Bitcoin. I'll see you back here when you get bored.
Yeah. And I think there's, like, this whole week has had me thinking about the different perspectives and about going back to the card preparation stuff, like how little regard is given to the perspective of the end user in this whole discussion. Nobody's asking the end user, how much preparation do you want done to your cards? Nobody's asking them that. And the answer is going to be none, at least from me as an end user. And then in this same question here, I think the perspective of somebody who's looking at cards as a financial instrument is then, yes, there seem to be better financial instruments right now than cards. And they probably are always better instruments, better financial instruments than cards. But the flip side is that if you're looking at it from the perspective of a collector or an end user, the way that that person typically operates is they're not looking at cards solely as financial instruments. There is a financial component to it, but they're looking at cards as things that they add to their collection for the long haul. And that person is probably in an environment where their traditional investments are doing well. Their portfolio in stocks is doing well. Their 401k is doing well. If they own shitcoin, that's doing well. That person is probably going to be feeling psychologically optimistic. And that person is probably going to say, you know what? If I just made X on my Bitcoin alt investment, I can spend 0.05x on a card. Like, I think that that's a mentality that some people have. And then there's also the very shrewd approach, or the approach that is considered, which is if the market is ripping over here and it's not ripping over here, there might be opportunity in the place where the market is slow. Not everybody buys into strength, which is a phrase I learned this week.
Why is it that everybody gets so excited to buy the thing that's already gone up? I've never understood that. It just blows my mind. Like, oh my God, you guys, you got to get on Bitcoin before it's too late. It's already gone from 10,000, 20,000 to 67. It's like, you missed it. Now is not the, I don't know. Maybe I'm an idiot. I buy stuff. I would rather buy something that's lower and then it's higher, I'm excited, right? Versus like, now that it's high, oh, now I gotta get in there. Don't understand that.
All right. From Hometown Authentics, I need help coming up with a name to describe a specific type of customer group that comes into the sports card shop that I work at.
This is my time to shine.
Good. The first time they come in the shop, they will look around and talk with some general hobby knowledge. They will make a purchase, usually under $5. Okay, under $5.
A pity button.
I believe they do this all in an effort to seem like a regular collector. This sets them up for their next visit, where they will try to sell us thousands of 80s and 90s common baseball cards. This has happened more times than I can count. I would love some help with coming up with a name to describe this customer group. Please discuss.
Oh my gosh. I need some time. That's a tough one. That's hilarious.
Yeah, like, first of all, this is savvy operating. Because most people who have like a bunch of junk commons don't usually know much. They're definitely not going to be sophisticated enough to be like, well, if I go in and I seem like I know a little bit and I buy a little tiny something, they're going to think that I could become like a long-term customer. So maybe they're going to want to buy all my junk cards from me. And right. Then they'll think I'm going to keep coming back, but I'm really not. I just want to offload my junk. So I'm impressed that...
Is that what you'd say to this person after they come back with, you said, wow, I'm so impressed, I should buy all that.
Steve R. Wag says, maybe you call them an I buy, you buy.
I buy $5, then you buy my $10,000 worth of junk.
Well, I just wonder, like, if they've ever thrown it back in the face, like, when they come back the second time and they have the big box, you're like, well, you don't want to buy these, but I bought this for $2 from your dollar box. Like, don't you want me as a customer?
I always think how terrible of a dealer / like card shop owner I would be, because if you're in that position, you have to kind of be open to like almost any type of thing that comes into your shop to be willing to like think about buying it, you know, given the what they're asking, what it's worth, etc. Someone come in and be like, this card's worth $10,000, I'm offering it to you for $5, and I'm like, yeah, but it's Trae Young. They're like, yeah, but you could double your money, and I'm like, yeah. But I'm not interested. You know, like this, they would walk in with all those 80s cards and I'd be like, nah. Like, don't you want me as a long-term customer? I'd be like, nope, don't care. Boring.
Dude. I'd
be out of business.
I think even this situation is like more pleasant to deal with than the average one, which is probably people who have no idea what they have.
Right.
And right. They're hoping that you're going to buy everything for a top dollar and it's worth what the value of it would be if it was all PSA 10s. And it's just like that. And that's the worst too. Cause like you tell somebody no, and then they go home and they write a terrible review about you. And it's a really difficult situation.
Yeah, but you can just write a review for yourself to counteract that. Isn't that acceptable practice now?
Just use AI. Can't you just use AI to write reviews about your company?
Yeah. Yep. Think so.
ChatGPT, write me 10,000 reviews for my own company and make them all good. Randomize them.
All right. From Matt Bubar. Has anyone noticed how Panini doesn't advertise the guys in their products that are exclusive to Fanatics? For example, Victor Wembanyama, CJ Stroud, and Brandon Miller. They're not advertised on the boxes. They're not advertised on social media posts. Do you think we'll keep seeing players sign exclusive deals every year and thus get no autographs with whichever company has the official licensing? Examples this year would be Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels, who are expected to be the top three picks in the draft.
Do we know where those three guys are signing? Is that what we're saying?
I don't think so. I think this is just like, what if it happens to these three as well?
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of seem like we're like in this NIL world where people are like picking individual spots from which they want to get the most money for themselves. And I mean, these athletes definitely aren't thinking about like, oh, I got to keep the integrity of the hobby going long term. I should sign with the one that's paying me less just to make sure the collectors are happy. Like, they're not thinking about that. They're just looking at, like, who's paying me the most.
Yeah. Exactly. So we cannot rely on the players
right.
to make decisions that are best for the long-term stability of brands and the hobby.
Which is a really good argument for not collecting autograph cards, you know, because it's like the Black Prism, you don't have to worry about this. You get it if they're in the league.
Yeah. And I did, like, go look at who's on the newest NBA box of Prism, and it's the Thompson Twins. So, like, that's a pretty deliberate, like, we're not featuring or promoting athletes who aren't signed to us, which is not unreasonable.
Yeah.
And then I guess sort of the concern becomes, like, well, yeah, right now the unlicensed manufacturer is poaching the biggest stars from the licensed manufacturer. Well, those two parties are about to switch sides, but what if the unlicensed manufacturer starts poaching from the licensed manufacturer, but now it's, instead of Topps doing it to Panini, it's Panini doing it to Topps? And what if we just have, like, a five-year chunk where none of the best prospects have autograph cards? You know, like, that's why this should be, like, I don't think these guys normally would start to field offers for exclusives quite yet, but hopefully, you know, this year could set a new example whereby the licensed manufacturer is going to be able to sign deals with the top prospects so that fully licensed autograph cards can come out during their rookie year.
Yeah. If
that precedent gets set, then hopefully we can avoid the tit for tat game theory escalation that just ultimately hurts everybody. Was that Joe Biden or helps everybody, hurts nobody? This is the opposite of that. Hurts everybody, helps nobody.
Yeah, I really, really want to see the Caleb Williams NT Shield auto sell for $1.5 million or whatever. Don't take that away from me, please.
Yeah.
Someone messaged me today and they're like, what's the best way to, like, find out how many cards of a player have sold over X dollar amount? And I showed them how to do that in sales history. And I was like, well, you're on this path. Go ahead and type in Justin Herbert, do minimum price 100,000, and that'll give you a chuckle. It's like, holy crap, there's like 35 sales over 100. I was like, yeah, look at the dates on those. They're all 2022 and before.
That's great. All right. From Tasty Card Sandwich, Elon Musk. What's that?
I'm hungry.
Elon Musk will give you the Michael Jordan Gem Masters free of monetary charge, but you have to burn all the remaining 97 through 99 Metal Universe, 2003 through 2009 Topps Chrome.
Oh my God.
And all basketball exquisites to ash. You have to burn it all to ash. Do you do it?
Yes.
So you have to, like, actively burn other people's collections?
Okay, well, sealed.
Oh.
You have to burn all the remaining sealed Tops, Chrome, and exquisite.
Done.
I see.
Yeah, I don't understand. What's the penalty here? I don't own any of that.
Yeah. Wait, is this 2 weeks in a row we got this, like, Musk dangling cards over, or, like, rich, like, billionaires dangling money over us? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last year it was drugs, a drug cocktail, and this year it's pyrotechnics.
I remember that. Man, these billionaires are so bored, so bored that they're now mixing into our realm and taunting us.
Yep.
Got it. I would say no. This seems mean, but you guys do you.
Yeah, I just don't understand what are the stakes here. So, like, everybody will hate me because I had to consent to, like, the spontaneous combustion of all the remaining steel boxes.
Like, This is like you walking into Nat's lair and being like, you snap your finger and like half of his sealed wax just blows up into smoke. And he's like, what the hell? Why'd you do that? And you're like, oh, Elon Musk, great. What do you want?
Yeah. To Nat, if he said, why did you do that? I would be like, don't make me snap my other hand. And then I'd walk out. Be happy that you still have the other half. While I walk away with this one of one.
Well, I think the implication of the question is that he's trying to pick like his favorite eras of cards to make people the most upset.
Right. Okay.
He's trying to like find the range of cards that he believes will make the most, the largest group, the most upset.
Yeah. I mean, the holders of the sealed product will be upset, but the holders of cards that have already come out of those boxes will be happy.
Yeah. I don't like playing God this much, you know?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm missing something here.
My son just watched Aladdin. So I'm in this game right now. I'm thinking about it. Like what would my wishes be kind of thing? The genie in the lamp. So this is on that level. What if I could just like disintegrate half the people's collections so that I get the best card and I improve other people's collections because there's no more product coming out?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have to say no. I think we have to say no.
Yes.
As you said that, you went like this.
But here's the caveat. Before we say no, we take this Elon Musk proposition and we show it to every owner of all these sealed products. And we say, I'm going to say no to this, but I'm requiring a 10% remission of your sealed wax.
Oh, smart.
So then they get to keep it all, but not all of it, but a little bit comes back to us.
So the first person that says no, you say, sorry, you blew it. Everyone's saying. <Sorry. laughs>
All right. From Venezuelan League Stickers. Kevin O'Leary broke boxes live with Shine. That's Mr. Wonderful, right?
Kevin O'Leary or Shine?
They're both wonderful. Okay. Does this mean I can go on Shark Tank and ask for $500,000 for a 3% stake in my personal collection?
Oh, that's funny. I wonder how long he'll stick around. We'll see.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I didn't even watch any of it.
I know that he's on Shark Tank, but I don't know anyone who's background is like they're rich because they invest in things. I'm usually like very confused because like at least Musk built things. I'm not sure what Kevin O'Leary did other than being on a TV show.
Fair enough. All right, from Card Shop Dad for you, Josh. Can Josh talk about what led him to part ways with the PMG grain of Penny Hardaway so that he could pursue other cards? What led you to it?
Hoping we'd end these questions. Thanks a lot. I don't know. It was a tough choice. Just feel like I'd rather.
Yeah, sorry. You have spoken to this on multiple other episodes.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I know.
People want the more longer answer.
I feel like the 90s stuff was a little hot. And I would just like rather put that. I took that money and just put it immediately into LeBron. I just feel like I'd rather just continue down my path of trying to have the best LeBron collection and double down on that.
There you go. All right. From JGP45, what is the most dog shit take you've heard during your time in the hobby?
Oh, man. Just open up your Instagram and start scrolling. You got plenty of options.
Yeah. What do you call it when there's a 10,000 way tie for first?
Yeah.
Bill Simmons rankings. Did you listen to the worst contract draft? That was really entertaining.
Dude, I knew I had to avoid that. I didn't quite know why. But I knew I should look like that. And then, like, I've seen people just, like, shredding Big Waz in particular.
Because he... What, do you know which one? Because I... Do you know which one they're shredding him on?
No, I just, like... There's a Twitter account that is dedicated to the Bill Simmons subreddit.
Right.
And it was posting lots of screenshots of people. One of them was... One of them said, I wish my wife loved me as much as Big Waz loves the sound of his own voice.
He definitely, like him and House will, like, go on a funny, like, tangent or topic, and then he'll just, like, jump in with his own thing. It's like, were you even listening to those guys? That's not even the topic. But he definitely does that a lot.
So I have not listened, but now I probably will.
I think he picked MPJ, which got the other two kind of, like, seriously. He was salty about that one. So, I don't know.
MPJ? Can you pick a contract of a guy who's on who's on the reigning championship team?
That was basically the argument. They're like, he's like the X factor of the champion. Bill said he's like kind of like the X factor of a championship team, and he hasn't had injury problems, and he's playing well. Like, they're like, I'm not seeing it here. Like, why would you got to pay somebody. You might as well just pay, you know, like, oh, okay, like, he might be making a little less, but that doesn't matter in this sense.
Yeah. Like, there's no doubt that he's overpaid given the production that he has, but.
I think it was more meant for, like, the Jordan Pools of the world, where it's like, crap, we thought he was going to be good, and he's actually, like, a detriment, and we're paying him a lot, and it's actually hurting us.
Yeah. I can see that. All right. I don't know. Jose, I don't have a most dog shit take, man, but I need to go into hibernation for months to study all the dog shit takes to tell you.
Desmond Ritter being a future of the NFL.
Yeah. That's a contender.
Pretty relevant right now. No?
Yeah. That's a really strong contender. All right. From Jesse J. Pender. If all of the buzz about Caitlin Clark beating Pete Maravich's scoring does not move Maravich's market, will there ever be anything that does?
Maravich kind of seems like he'll just follow the vintage index. You know, I don't think there's any, like, event for him specifically. It's more just like cards and the CL50 and stuff.
Right.
If I'm wrong, but wasn't he pre-3-point era?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you see? Okay. He played one less year, but he also attempted, like, way more shots. Like, he was a really poor percentage shooter.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark's more efficient. She played more years, but she's more efficient.
Well, I just want to point something out. This tall boy, Maravich, 1970 Tops, is his rookie card, if I'm not mistaken. And
yes.
In a PSA 10 Pop 2, this card is worth about $500,000. It sold for over $500,000 in July of 2023.
Holy shit. But he doesn't get any love in his cards, right?
Well, that's kind of where I'm headed with this. Is like, you know, the guy's got a $500,000 card sale within the last 9 months. You know, like, I don't know about, like, the dynamics of his market and, like, what's going to help it, like, move up and stuff. Like, I totally get the theory that his market should go up because he's top of mind. He's being mentioned on SportsCenter every day. Like, that should be sending more people to go look at his cards and stuff like that. I understand that point of view, but, like, I don't want to create the impression that his market is weak or anything, because, like, this guy has a Pop 2 rookie card that's worth over $500,000. So.
He's like, good.
Seems pretty good.
Is that a lot of money?
Yeah, and especially, like, considering that this card comes from not only, like, pre the LeBron era, pre Steph Curry era, pre Michael Jordan era, pre Larry Bird era, pre Magic Johnson era, pre the NBA being live televised era, pre arenas that hold 20,000 people era.
Three-point shot era,
pre 15 teams in the league era, like pre the collecting boom of the 80s, pre the collecting boom of the 90s, pre the pandemic collecting boom era, like how many people were collecting NBA trading cards in 1970? Not that many. So for this card to be worth $500,000 with like not that strong of a nostalgia factor, given the small number of people who collected back then, of a player who is one of the greatest college players of all time, but and is beloved and had like a really tragic ending to his life and like had just he's an icon, but like he has a $500,000 card, like it's impressive.
Say pre.
He's got,
say pre again.
Pre.
Done.
Prius. All right. Thank you for the question, Jesse. Triple J Gambino.
Say pre.
All right. Well. I don't have any pre's right now, but.
It's a joke. We don't want you to say it anymore.
Okay. No more pre's. Triple J Gambino says, I have to ask, is it time to buy low on Sean Taylor? And this is referring to a massive Sean Taylor card sale that happened recently. The sale is this. This is the 2004 Bowman Chrome Blue Super Fractor 1/1.
Whoa.
Of Sean Taylor. It sold for $21,000.
Holy crap.
2 weeks ago.
I would have never guessed that the 1/1 was a blue refractor.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's the most shocking thing. I mean, that's a pretty sweet 1/1, dude.
Yep.
I mean, he, similar to Pete Maravich, tragic early passing in his life, fantastic player. I think there's a lot of nostalgia for Sean Taylor. I remember him. I remember playing with him on Madden when I was a kid. All the time. He was a great safety on Madden. He had really high stats. So I always like tried to get him on my team. I mean, sweet card.
It is a cool card. I don't know if it's worth $21,000, but
oh my gosh, here we go, Mr. Tim Duncan over here. Get out of here.
All I'll say is that events transpired in the last week, which I think supported my opinion on that, Tim Duncan.
What?
The buyer revealed himself.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Not
like he flashed.
Not this again. All right. So, from Card Shop Dad, next question. At what age did you realize you were not going to be an NBA player?
Let's see. I'm 35 now. So, 34? After we mopped the floor with those guys at National 11-0, I thought, you know what? The dream is still alive. And then a couple months pass, and it's like, yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah, you know, I'm still holding up.
That's why you've been doing all the, that's why you've been shooting so much?
Yep. You Dude. Know, Reggie Miller said he got to get up 500 shots a day.
I just watched. Did he say that?
Yeah.
No. I just watched 2.5 hours of Charlotte Hornets basketball. I'm still just fine. That team is horrible. They're so bad.
All right. I'm surprised that we're not going to be able to get through all the questions, but we're getting close. We have about 8 left. Pacheco Card says, what does it say if you see an in-uniform picture of your PC player? and you know what game it is, judging only by the stain.
What?
What does it say?
You're obsessed? Like, I don't...
You're a stain specialist.
You should get into memorabilia.
You know how Dustin Hoffman was the Rain Man, and like the matches dropped and he counted exactly how many? You're the Stain Man.
Yes.
And you know from the stain.
What kind of stain are we talking about? Is this like a Wilt Chamberlain short stain or like a grass stain?
No stain.
He didn't specify what type of stain.
Hmm.
All right. He definitely knows his Pacheco stains, I think. All right. From Card Sham Card. That name, I get a kick out of that name.
That's good.
How will PSA and SGC be handling crossovers? Will they honor each other's grades? Seems like there may be a financial incentive to boost the price of SGC slabs.
No, they will not be doing this.
Yeah. When this news first came out, we spent some time at the beginning of that episode discussing things like this. And I want to know who the hell is crossing PSA to SGC.
Come on, man. That's mean.
I'm just joking. All right. From 90s B-ball cards from Jake. Do we need to start a Patreon to fund Josh's Truly inventory? The Trulys have been missing lately.
I like how people are worried that I'm becoming less of an alcoholic now. That's concerning to me.
There's never been any concern the other way. Like, well, yeah, Josh was a few Trulys the other night, but now that they're gone.
Yeah. I went from two or three Trulys a week, all on camera, to zero, and people are now concerned.
Well, maybe you can bring a case to the National, Jake.
A case, and then I'll bring it back. Yeah, thanks.
yes, times are tough for Josh. He hasn't been able to afford his Trulys lately.
Dude, I used to take like, it would be like 5 weeks that it'd take me to get through a case of that stuff, because it's just like, I'm not drinking it the rest of the week. I have kids.
All right. I think it's time to pick a title.
I'm really excited about this week. I feel like we got some really good ones.
Yeah, I have at least 15 written down here.
There's like some real good ones I know. Let's go.
All right. First up, bribe an official.
I'm already excited. This is great.
Oh, that's because your card was in customs, okay? Next up, the greatest trio of flops.
Why did you look at me when you asked that? Like, I was the one who was saying, let's go bribe someone.
I did not do that.
Yes, you did. I'm watching you right here.
There may have been a look, but the look did not communicate that I think you're bribing me.
What's the flops? What is that? Trio of flops?
The greatest trio of flops.
I don't remember that one.
That's referring to Ritter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's referring to, yeah, okay. All right.
That's enough.
Next is a double enunciate.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense, but it's good.
No, yeah. Next is stop altering my fucking cards.
That's a very direct caption.
The one that's never been touched.
That's pretty good.
Invest in chem wipes.
Again, like very direct of where we sit.
He's selling pixie dust. That's good. That's good. What do you think about it?
The fairy is the emoji.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Because we don't actually say who or what it's for. You could probably guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. My counter to the counter to the counter. That's so good. I love that one. All right.
I told you, this week's stock full of them.
That's like Frasier humor, which I love.
Okay. Yeah.
This horse is dead.
That's the one that gets Christina giggling, is that one. You just never know with her sometimes.
No, you really don't. No. For her, the key is not raising the bar, it's lowering the bar.
It's like you gotta really get in the mud. You gotta muck around in the mud.
Yes. Alright, next one.
Noted.
Next one is watch me spit on this thing.
That's the one I was waiting for. Oh, that's so bad. That's the one where you have to look over at Christina and have her go, nope.
Yeah. No,
I don't even need to, actually, on that one.
There's like, I'd rather not, just to be honest with you.
Don't ever let them become a head coach.
You're like, whatever you do, just anything, you could get into politics, just don't be a coach.
Jomo, which that's from Iowa Dave's episodes, that's his thing. You actually backfired yourself.
Telling collectors not to like something, it made them like it.
Yes.
Dude, it's like, that phrase is probably incorrect, but you know what I mean when I say it.
Yes.
That's the great thing about English. You could just rattle off words. You know what I'm saying?
I do. All right, next one is, the answer is going to be none.
Yeah, that one is one of my faves. You said it, and it sounded so fun, because you were like, the answer is going to be none.
What was I talking about?
You were like, if you want to know what we'd allow or what we would want to be changed to be closer to the manufacturer, I'll tell you the answer, none.
Okay, got it. All right. And then we have hurts everybody, helps no one. It's the reverse Joe Biden. Anytime I see that clip, it just kills me. And then the last one is Stain Man.
All right, so the pixie dust one stands out, and there was like two or three before that one. There's a couple in there that I like. Read those ones again.
So he's selling pixie dust.
Yep, and then before those, there's a couple.
And then there's like three before that. So there's stop altering my fucking cards, which we're not going to do that. The one that's never been touched.
Yeah, that one.
That's kind of funny. And then invest in chem wipes.
Yep, that one.
They're all good. They're all fucking good.
Those three, though. I like those three. They're on point.
The one that's never been touched, invest in chem wipes. He's selling pixie dust.
Do you think I'm on the right track with those three?
Yeah, absolutely.
One
of those three.
Wait, what are the pixie dust, chem wipes, and what was the third one?
The one that's never been touched.
I think we each said one of those.
Yeah, okay, well.
I'm basically deciding if I want to throw Christina a bone. That's where we're at.
Always good to throw her a bone.
Let's give her the cue.
The only problem with that is, like, unless you know what chem wipes are, it sounds like you're wiping chemicals on something.
That could seem like we're on the side of.
That's what I'm hearing. Unless you know what chem wipes are doing.
We don't want that.
Yeah, that's why I'm taking myself out, guys.
I like the I like the one that you have, actually. I was going to say yours first, then Chem Wipes, then the Pixie Dust one. So, because yours is just like, it's very to the point.
The one that's never been touched?
Yeah. And it's like a little bit odd.
I'll tell you this. I didn't, that wasn't my favorite when we were going down the list. But
I've convinced you.
Yeah, when we narrowed it down, when we went through the process of elimination, I do think it's a good one to have left standing.
It's so like ridiculous too. Like it doesn't really.
Yeah, what does that fucking mean?
It just looks like an all lowercase, like stupid caption. That's like what?
Exactly. It's got the right amount of stupid to it. All right, and then will there be a show next week?
No show next week. Sorry.
No.
We're due, man. It's been like five in a row. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. You guys better hope we don't take 2 weeks off.
And I'm never going to forget this, but we did that thing with like the, how many games you need to play? 65 divided by 82. I'm never going to forget that.
That was great concept.
We're never going to, we're always going to hover over it. We're just, it's like, oh, I'm getting too far away from that. I got to miss a game.
All right, we'll see you guys, but not next week.
EY Card Ladder is the most respected sports card analytics app on the market. We have virtually every card in our system. If the card you are looking for ever sold on one of these platforms, you can find it using Card Ladder's sales history. Easily find recent comps and get a better estimate what your cards are worth. See why Card Ladder is the most trusted and the most reliable sports card analytics app on the market. We know what you want because Card Ladder was created by collectors for collectors. Join the innovators, not the imitators. Card Ladder, constantly innovating. Try it for free. See why Card Ladder is the industry leader in sports card data. We know what it takes to be reaching the top. Card Ladder. We're just getting started.